The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
It's probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds. You're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club podcast brought to you by Union Bank and Trust. I've graduated. I feel like a big kid now. We have a brought to you on this podcast. I think the next step in my transition is calling up ABM. Got to get Sean on the phone to figure out how he did it. Brandon Vogel is my guest this week. Brandon, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to figure out, is it a Nebraska hat that you have on? It's an Adidas hat.
Yeah, no, this is a Hemingford High School basketball hat where a Hemingford Bobcat is spinning a basketball instead of a Boston Celtic. So it's a little bit of a logo mashup.
I love it. We have you on to talk about the, I guess, quote unquote quarterback competition. But the thing that I really want to talk to you about is sort of the comments that were made this week by Nebraska offensive coordinator Mark Whipple talking about, like, he wants to see more energy from the offense. He wants to see more from the offense. Coupled with Casey Thompson's comments that they don't have enough leaders on offense or they don't have enough people being vocal on offense. And so he's kind of taking it upon himself. But first, before we dive into that, I want to take a second and thank the sponsor, FSC Edge. I ask questions for a living. The best Q&A sessions that I've ever been in have been ones where I felt like the person on the other side of the tape recorder was invested in me just as much as I was invested in them. Talk to folks who've worked with FSC Edge, who have gone to the offices, who have met with, and they will all tell you the same thing. You'll get the same kind of treatment. FSC Edge integrates AI technologies, case management tools, and augmented operators to optimally process patent documents quickly and accurately. They work with some of the largest patent offices around the world to manage thousands of patent applications and granted patents. We're talking about a place that deals on a massive scale, protecting inventors and advancing innovation, but does so in a way that makes every client who walks in the door feel important and heard. FSC Edge is always looking for new members to come on board and join their team. You'll be doing impactful work and learning about patents in a welcoming, easygoing environment. Check out available jobs today by going to jobs@fsc.com. Probably 30 minutes, we're recording this Thursday afternoon, 30 minutes before we hopped in this lobby to podcast, a tweet from Antonio Brown came across my timeline. And I'm going to guess that you haven't seen this yet. And so I'm going to read this tweet to you because it's maybe the greatest statement from an athlete that I think I've ever seen. He tweets, "Sincerely, AB," with a graphic, his face smiling next to a bunch of words. Quote, "My biggest regret in my career doesn't involve calling my GM a cracker or showing up to Raiders camp late in a hot air balloon with frozen feet or throwing rocks at that UPS driver. And it definitely doesn't involve taking my shirt off and doing a victory lap around the Jet Stadium mid-game while throwing up deuces. First of all, oh my God."
We're off to a strong start.
Just flex on him, AB. "My biggest regret," these are Antonio's words again, "my biggest regret is that I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live. Sure, I can watch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what that was like for you all to see something like that. Like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks."
The Beatles or Jesus. Wow.
What?
No notes. Perfect as is. Print it.
This is better than Michael Jordan's, like, facts that he was back. This is the greatest statement I've ever seen.
Yeah, it definitely is better than the facts. You know, the fact that it was a fax, although era appropriate, hasn't aged so well. I mean, for a long time with my era, Ricky Henderson was maybe the king of self-belief, I guess we'll put it that way. And I mean, this is the pros to high school stuff with what Ricky Henderson was doing. I kind of can't believe it. I'm shocked.
This is when I'm, you know, 30 years from now, when I'm hopefully teaching journalism classes at whatever school I'm teaching a journalism class at, this is going to be in my curriculum.
And I think also in your curriculum, one of the things you can convey to your students is a similar sentiment. It'd be like, look, you guys are pretty fortunate to learn from me because you can go back and read those stories that I wrote as a totally new, coming in cold reader. You wrote them. You can never read your own stories in the way that Antonio Brown will never get the opportunity to watch himself play.
I feel bad for him. But also this whole situation gets better. It gets better because in the replies, there's a verified account, a company that I've never heard of called Tick Pick. And in the bio for this Twitter account, this company says the best content for fans from a ticket app, save money and never pay fees again. Tick Pick comments on Antonio Brown's statement saying AB higher than StubHub's fees right now. StubHub is just, when this came across my timeline, because I saw this and then the Tick Pick thing was immediately, and it was just like, it was the perfect 1-2 where you get knocked out and you have absolutely no idea where you are. Completely discombobulated.
Yeah, that's pretty good for a Thursday afternoon. I'm glad you brought that to my attention.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Nebraska's quarterback situation. First and foremost, his job is Casey Thompson's. We kind of suspected that in the spring. That's been reinforced in the fall. The job is Casey Thompson's. Brandon, what did you make of the fact that the narrative after day 16 of preseason camp, practice 12 of preseason camp, in year, five for Scott Frost, is that the offense needs more vocal leaders? Was that something that registered on your radar? Is like, why are we still talking about this? Was that something that you were like, this is interesting? Or were you just like, okay, they don't want to tell us what the offense looks like, so we're just creating sort of stories for right now to push us through until Northwestern?
there's always a little of the last one, I think. In fact, we should probably next year with our what if we do a fall camp preview podcast, we should probably come up with a game where you can bet on like which media availability it is, however many we're in before it's the bad practice availability, because you're gonna have one, you know, and it's never gonna be early and it's never gonna be the first week of camp. Because you know you want to pump the guys up and keep them going to have the strength to keep pushing the sleds and doing the drills, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, week two. So really, the concerning part about this might be how early this comes. Nebraska making it into its third week of camp might make it okay, but I think you're just inevitably going to have one at some point. The coach is going to be like, "All right, we gotta crack the whip here a little bit and say, hey, not everything's awesome," and try to give the players a little push that way. So that's piece one of it. I think there's always one of these, and we should start tracking them to see when they happen, to have some historical basis for this stuff. The second part is the more vocal leaders piece. It didn't surprise me at all, really. I mean, I think it's kind of inherent to it might be inherent to having a transfer quarterback, which is interesting across the sport, because how many teams have a current quarterback battle going on with a transfer? Nebraska has one primarily between two transfers. And I agree with you. I don't know how much of a battle it actually is at this point. But Nebraska also has transfers all over the offense. And you look at the captains last year on the offensive side, both are gone. Turner Corcoran has been a player who has been pretty consistently, you know, brought to the podium for Monday press conferences and things like that. And that's a pretty good indication, I think, of guys who are taking on a leadership role or who the staff sees, who the staff basically trusts to put up there.
And Casey did mention him as a guy who talks. So, yeah.
Yep. And he's one. And Vokolek's another one. Vokolek has been kind of a fixture at those Monday press conferences. So that makes sense. Beyond that, though, like, who else should that be? And maybe that's the question, because you go down the roster, you've got some experienced guys on the line who could be there, but you're looking at, you know, a Brock Bando, a Trent Hickson, guys who are experienced, but who have always been, you know, pretty quiet, I think by choice. That's just their kind of preferred style. You've got some transfer wide receivers who are, well, Trey Palmer, certainly a big personality, but that doesn't necessarily make you a leader automatically. You know, it's just kind of the nature, I think, of where they're at with what they had to do with the roster to kind of fill in the depth concerns they had.
Yeah, and it definitely feels like one of those things where when you run through the positions and like look at some of the guys that they have. You mentioned Trey Palmer. He feels like he'd be one of like the dudes that when you're, let's say we get our hands on an opposing team scouting report of Nebraska, Trey Palmer's listed with the wide receivers. He's a transfer. And I would imagine that more often than not, a transfer's mentality, regardless of how outspoken they are, how like colorful their personality is, more often than not, I would guess that a transfer's approach to a new team is to say, I'm just going to keep my head down and I'm just going to work. Look at running back. Gabe Irvin is projected to be the guy. He's still young. He's still very young and didn't play a ton last year because of an injury. And then the other guy is a transfer. And then you look at the offensive line, Cam Jurgens is gone. Like this, you know, I saw a bunch of the tweets. I saw the No Context College Football Twitter account tweet out the screenshot of Mark Whipple saying it was a bad day, and then Casey Thompson saying that this is the best we've looked since I've been here, which was hilarious. And I just kind of thought, like you said, like, you know, we're going to have one of these days, and this feels like one of those days. They put Nebraska in or they put the team in Memorial Stadium to, quote unquote, give them some juice to get through because it's a grind in fall camp when you keep practicing day after day. It just felt like we're checking off boxes until we get to the season in terms of some of these media availabilities. It felt like
there are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The more interesting thing to me that came out of it was I was reading through Mitch Sherman's write-up at The Athletic, and he said that he saw Scott Frost working with the quarterbacks and Mark Whipple on the field on a drill that included read option pitches. And that drill lasted 5 minutes, but that drill was there. And if you, I guess if you enter into this season thinking that, okay, Mark Whipple has the OC job, it's Mark Whipple's offense, they ain't running any option plays. That's not Mark Whipple's bag. Then you would be shocked by this. If you are in the camp that Scott Frost is probably going to keep at least a toe in the offense's pool, you're not shocked by this. Brennan, will Nebraska actually run read option, triple option, some variation of an option play this season, yes or no?
Well, they'll definitely run one this season. I think they'll have it. It'll be there. I don't see it being a regular part of their attack with Casey Thompson back there. So, which doesn't mean they won't run it if he's in there. It's kind of worthless if he can't do it at all. And I don't think that's the case, you know? Yeah. It's, you think back to like pure option quarterbacks, and speed and kind of being able to read the defense and having good sense of when to pitch, when to not. Like, they're all kind of, you know, unique skill sets on their own. But the way the play is designed, like, if you can get the read part of it, maybe if you're not the fastest guy, it can still be an effective play for you. I mean, this part of it is kind of super interesting to me, because in July on the Husker Sports Network radio appearance, Whipple kind of indicated that that was still part of their plan, which makes me think that it's true. There's a piece of this that could be, okay, you know, we get to see two practices during fall camp. They might show this because they know it's going to be a thing, because this is Nebraska, and put it out there. Like, Northwestern's got a little bit of a guessing game. So it could just be a little bit of a sleight of hand. Like, we're going to show this, probably not going to use it, but then at least Northwestern has to think about it. But then I think back to that game against the Wildcats a year ago, and Nebraska kind of killed Northwestern with the option. Pat Fitzgerald talked about it after the game. He's like, we knew they were going to do it. We thought we had a good plan, and they just executed it better. So I would be surprised if we didn't see it at some point during the season. And honestly, I'll be surprised if we don't see it against Northwestern.
So here's something that I've been thinking about. And for you, for anybody listening, if this comes across as dumb or if this has already been answered, then I apologize. But I'm a degree or two more removed from this than you are. And I've been thinking about when Whipple was introduced in the very like infancy stages of this partnership between him and Scott Frost, the narrative was that this was a marrying of philosophies in some respects, that this was going to be taking pieces of what Scott Frost has done that has worked and putting it together with what Mark Whipple has done and has worked at other spots so that Nebraska can try and reinvigorate this offense. And it seems like as we have gone along throughout this offseason, the narrative has shifted to this is Scott Frost has no say in the offense whatsoever. This is Mark Whipple's deal. Scott Frost isn't going to be involved. And I mean, I've asked like Aaron about this. I think I've asked you about this on the podcast. Like, do we think that Scott's going to be involved in the offense, or if it's going to be only Whipple's show? And I was just kind of thinking about this the other day, and like, wasn't it like, am I mischaracterizing the beginning stages of this partnership and saying that initially we were told that like this was going to be sort of a marrying of styles? And so if that's the case, then it shouldn't come as a major surprise that Nebraska is at least working on some elements of a read option game.
Yeah, I don't think it should be. So it's been an interesting kind of journey with like figuring out what this collaboration looks like. Because I think early in the spring, you know, and even at Big Ten Media Days, you know, Frost, he got a question directly about like, what's it like to be hands off with the offense now? And he's like, I wouldn't put it that way. I'm not hands off. Since then, you know, and I think it was last week during his availability, he had, and I'm drawing a blank on the, you know, the words more specifically, but kind of gave the impression that he was a little bit more comfortable, you know, stepping back. And I do think it is a comfort thing. He's a good play caller. Like, you know, Nebraska hasn't had the results, and we all know that. But, like, in terms of the plays that they call and run being there, the amount of variety they offer opposing defenses, like, I have a hard time arguing with that piece of it. I'll go back to that July radio appearance, but I'm a little hesitant to, because I feel like I'm putting a lot of eggs in just a midsummer interview. But during that, Whipple also said something that really caught my attention and has kind of been my operating theory about how this whole thing melds together. He was talking about Logan Smothers and said, Logan only had to learn half the offense. And the implication there was, I think a lot of the run concepts are the same. The passing concepts are probably, I think Whipple takes the lead on that specifically. And until I see some games and we see differently, that's kind of the assumption I'm working with going in. I think Nebraska's run game is going to look a lot the same as it has in the past, whether that makes you happy or sad. That's kind of the impression I got from Whipple's comments at that point.
So there's a ton of incentive here to not run your quarterback, because Nebraska's past has been running the quarterback, and recent past has been running the quarterback into the ground. So for this new, I guess, like this restart, whatever you want to call it, there is sort of, I feel like in the back of Frost's brain, there's a, we can't do to Casey or Chuba, whoever it is, what we did to Adrian. At the same time, some of that stuff has worked. And if you look throughout college football, a lot of people run it because it puts the defense in stress.
Yeah.
My question for you, Casey ran it 55 times last year with Texas. He had more than 5 carries rushing attempts in a game. And I'm looking at Sports Reference, and I don't think they filter out sacks. So maybe a bunch of these are sacks, but he had more than 5 rushing attempts in a game. Put a little asterisk next to it. 5 times. Not a big runner. From what you have seen, heard, do you think that was by design? Do you think he's somebody that can give Nebraska some kind of, I don't know, escapability? I won't call it dual threat, but escapability if he needs to.
I think he can. And I'd be a little surprised if his rush attempts weren't a little higher than that in this offense. But I think the closer they are to 55 on the season, or about 5 a game, the better off Nebraska probably is. I'll give credit to Sam McEwen of the Omaha World Herald, who a couple of weeks ago, I thought, put this really, really well. Nebraska's offense probably for this version, for 2022's version to succeed, the more quarterback independent it is, it's probably better. And when you look back at the past 10, 13, 14 years of Nebraska football, it's been really, really quarterback dependent, particularly during the dual Martinez eras. And I mean, those guys were great players, both Taylor and Adrian. Like their talent and their ability jumped off the screen. So did their weaknesses at times, and it happened to be turnovers in both cases. And I think that's because, you know, for a lot of those stretches, less so with Taylor than with Adrian, this was certainly the case with Adrian, it was their ace up their sleeve. It was their best option when the going got tough. And if Nebraska is to get to where it wants to go, particularly with the quarterbacks it has on the roster right now, I don't think that can be the case. So that naturally probably brings down the number of QB runs a little bit, which, you know, just as a observer of football, makes you a little bit nervous, because, or makes me a little bit nervous, because you put it well, like that's a really good weapon if you got the right guy back there. And there's a reason everybody, well, almost everybody wants to take a real long look at a dual threat quarterback if they can get one.
And here's the other side of that. Maybe this offensive line isn't built for that kind of running game.
Very well could be. And, you know, that's eventually we'll hear from Raiola this fall camp. We were scheduled to hear from him this week. Didn't work out. So it'll be really interesting, because, you know, that's another one that's been pretty consistent through this entire offseason in the spring on through to fall camp, where, you know, Frost just kind of keeps saying, like, how he teaches is how I want our plays to be run, which is, you know, fine and good, and you just got to take them at their word for that. But it's to think about the term fire off the ball keeps coming up, and I kind of hesitate for a moment. I was like, is it really that simple? Because, I mean, that seems kind of like a basic tenet of offensive line play. And it's probably not that simple. It's just the easiest way to convey it. But it's the sort of thing you can't really assess for yourself until you start seeing some games.
Yeah, because they spent a ton of time last season. I mean, it came up a bunch where you would get offensive linemen off to the side, and they'd say, yeah, we just want to, you know, when we have a power run game, when we dial up some of that power stuff, that's where we feel like we're at our best. And I always kind of pocketed those little comments and thought, this is interesting. So if there's less read element, less optionality to it, and more power, maybe that's, or more just, like you said, firing off the ball, maybe just go hit someone. Maybe that's them sort of making that adjustment 4 years into it, but still an adjustment to what they have and the talent that they have. You were going to say something.
Yeah, I mean, if they can add, since 2018, the lack of a consistent handoff run game has been a big struggle for this offense in my regard. If they can find that, and you're not, you know, running back talent has to do with that, of course, and I kind of like the group there. You know, it's, you don't have a lot of proven options, but you got a lot of, it's got a high ceiling, I would say. But you're going to need talent on the O-line too, and you're going to need a kind of mindset and a team within a team up there. And I think if things go well in year one under Raiola, that's probably where the difference comes. You know, the talent is, well, you lost Cam Jurgens. You lost the most talented guy in your line from a proven perspective. So that's out the window. But how are you going to make up for that? If you get one that's operating more like a unit, which I think is always essential on the offensive line, maybe you don't notice the kind of gaping hole there at center, which isn't to say anything, you know, negative about Trent Hickson and his ability at that spot. It's just Cam Jurgens became a really good player.
Yeah, I mean, Trent Hickson Trent Hickson isn't an NFL draft pick, and Cam Jurgens was. You guys won't get to hear from assistant coaches in season, correct?
Correct.
Does in season apply to the first week of like game prep for Northwestern, or like the week leading up to Northwestern?
I'm guessing so. So I think in Ireland, like, I'd be surprised if we didn't hear from the coordinators, and I think we'll hear from the coordinators during the season too. It's just the position coaches specifically. So I think next week will probably be about the last week. So Nebraska's fourth week of fall camp. Where we'll hear from those position coaches on a regular basis.
So that's kind of what I was getting at. It's August 11th. When this podcast publishes, it'll be August 12th. Maybe you're listening to this on August 13th. I kind of smiled when you said you didn't get to talk to Raiola this week. What's the likelihood it just doesn't happen between now and the first game week?
I would call it a coin flip at this point. I can't remember what the reason was when I was talking to Aaron after this week's most recent practice. There was a legitimate reason. He was scheduled to talk. We were told he was going to meet with the media, and then something came up and he couldn't. So I don't think they're making him unavailable for any specific reason. Now, if he doesn't end up, if we don't hear from him at all fall camp, I'll be like, oh, well, that'll kind of raise my antennae a little bit. But
yeah, I don't want to offhand suggest anything nefarious is happening for anybody listening. I just thought that was kind of funny, that, you know, that's the most important position group for them this season. And maybe it just doesn't work out and you just don't get to talk to the position coach in fall camp. Maybe that just, you know, that's the way that happens. And look, a lot of teams don't let assistant coaches talk to the media. That's fine. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom, a performance enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate. how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
How are you feeling about this team right now, 2.5-ish weeks before the year?
Good question. I still don't feel, and this doesn't, you know, this isn't a reaction to a poor practice on offense this week or any of that. I just don't, it's hard to know how the pieces all fit there. And, you know, we're talking about the offensive line. I agree. It's the key to this. Like, for Nebraska to be an above average team record wise, it's tough to do that in the Big Ten with a just average offensive line. Now, I don't expect them to be one of the three or four best in the Big Ten, but they probably need to get close to get to where they want to go. Quarterbacks, interesting. Really, the entire offense is a little bit of an enigma to me. Defense, I will say, I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic about, and I wasn't ever down on them. It was just like, well, they gave up basically 23 points a game last year, lost some really key contributors. I think the key there will be the defensive line, because you've got a really, really good group of linebackers, in my opinion, and a really broad group in the secondary to choose from. And I have quite a bit of confidence in the coaching in the back four. So I feel pretty good about that group. Can that defensive line do what last year's did, basically, you know, chew up some blocks, be pretty assignment sound, and give those linebackers room to work? If they do that, you know, Nebraska might slip back a little bit from 23, 24 points a game. I don't think that's a realistic expectation given what they lost, but it doesn't have to be that far. So really, the onus, as it has been entering the last at least three seasons, is can this offense produce more points? You can't average 28 points a game again, I think, and get to the 7, 8, 9 wins that I think this team has the potential to reach.
You mentioned there that the offense is an enigma to you. I think it's probably an enigma to a lot of people, and I think it's probably an enigma to Pat Fitzgerald at this point.
Yeah.
How much of this offseason and what has been said and what has been revealed and what has been shown is about just creating smoke screens for Fitzgerald? Do you think Frost is petty enough to say, Brett Bielema did this to me last year, so I'm going to do this to Pat this year?
Could happen. I think it's less of putting a bunch of stuff out there that you have no intention of actually using, and more just holding back as much as possible. So there'll be some wrinkles that, like, you know, haven't come up anywhere through spring football, through all this fall camp availability. There'll be a couple of things in that game where you're like, well, where'd that come from? No, they held it back. But for the most part, and, you know, and Pat Fitzgerald talked about that at Big Ten Media Days as well. And he acknowledged, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge. I don't know if when that happened with Nebraska last year against Illinois, like, I got it and I understand, you know, that can drastically change things. That said, like, so much of coaching is getting in game and figuring out a way to win the game when things change from what you prepared for. So I acknowledge the mystery. It's in Nebraska's favor this time, in a way that it wasn't last time. But those things on their own, I guess, don't decide games is what I'm trying to say.
That was a very diplomatic way of putting that. Well done. Also, I want to point out that we have come up with two story ideas in this podcast, and I would like to see if you don't do it, I'm going to do one of them. And one of them, you were talking about Nebraska being so quarterback dependent. And I guess, you know, by extension, my dog thinks so too. By extension, you know, talking about Sam McEwen's comment. I wonder if you go look back through like modern college football, like what caliber of quarterback you need to be successful if you are going to be quarterback dependent. Because I started to think about Joe Burrow at LSU. That team was probably pretty quarterback dependent, but that was a like legendary Joe Burrow season. And like last year's national champion wasn't really quarterback dependent. Alabama's had really good quarterbacks, but I don't know if you could, if you would ever categorize them as quarterback dependent, super dependent on those guys. So that might be something interesting to see what kind, what caliber of quarterback you need.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I do think it's something worth diving in. Wheels are turning now because, you know, like you said, Alabama has had good quarterbacks. It's also one with quarterbacks who were, you know, on an Alabama scale, closer to middle of the pack. I mean, you look back to that Texas national title in 2005, and maybe that's the starting point, you know, post Vince Young, because that was kind of the ultimate of, you know, and that, those Texas teams were good. But Vince Young was so good. And he was a guy who was just like, save us. And he did. So maybe that's the launching off point for modern college football in this context of a kind of spread era, do everything quarterback, because it's interesting. You know, Georgia was maybe the ultimate example to the opposite of that just a year ago, which when you have a defense that includes basically the entire first round of the NFL draft, that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Brandon, you got to go. You got a hard out. You got some stuff that you got to do. So I'll let you get out of here. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's great to catch up.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We'll be back next week. In the meantime, keep reading HailVarsity.com. If you don't have a subscription to Hail Varsity, go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Use the coupon code Varsity, all caps, Varsity. Get that fixed so that you can read everything, so that you can get the magazine, all of the Huskers content that you could possibly hope for. HailVarsity.com. Brandon, also, is the I-80 preview show coming back this year?
Yeah, so I've actually already done two so far. Did what I did last year of taking an offense and defense preview and basically just turning it into a podcast. And then the actual Northwestern game preview will come out a week early ahead of that game, so I can record that and do what I'd normally do with it, because the following week I'll actually be traveling to Ireland when I normally record. So Aaron and I are planning to do a live show from Ireland there. So it's back up and running. Defense preview just went up this week, offense week before that. So you can definitely check for that.
Oh, so I'm going to use the defense that I'm podcast backlogged. I haven't listened to a podcast in a long time.
That's fair.
Now I feel bad.
I accept that.
I-80 preview. Go listen to it. Subscribe to it. It's really good. And I will get caught up. It's great. Shouts to Brandon for being on the episode this week. Shouts to Cam for producing this episode every week. Shouts to you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.
A Huda Media Production.